you and Seinfeld, I feel like touring together, it's a little bit of a monopoly. I feel like the government should break it up.
Really?
You're taking comedy audiences, you're touring as a double bill.
Oh, that's
interesting. You're taking comedy audiences and there's nothing left for the rest of us.
Oh my gosh. Obviously, you're being nice, but it is one of those things where Jerry had brought it up before the pandemic. He's like, why don't we do a couple of shows together? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
On that tour, will you pick his brain about comedy?
Oh my gosh, that's all we'll talk about. Well, we meet up all the time and do a show, and then we'll talk for 2 hours about stand-up.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And because I think he is the guru.
Yeah, he's the Socrates of comedy.
He is. That is the voice of the great Jim Gaffigan. Jim is one of my favorite comics, one of the comics who inspired me to start doing comedy, one of the people who I actually met with 25 years ago and asked him how he did stand-up comedy. Because he also went to Georgetown University, and so I looked in the alumni book for stand-up comedian, and there was only one. It was Jim Gaffigan. And so I called him on a landline and got him on the phone, and here we are on my Working It Out podcast today, working out new jokes. We recorded this this summer. He has an amazing special that I highly recommend, or go see him on tour. I am out on tour right now. I'm having a blast doing this new show. It's a new hour of comedy. You know, all my other shows, The Old Man in the Pool, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and the new one, all those ones, they have some kind of dramatic arc. It leads towards a point. This one currently has no point other than to just be very funny and raw. And I'm bringing that out on stage to cities that I honestly just want to go to or want to go back to. So, for example, like I'm going to Tulsa, and I've never performed in Tulsa. I'm going all over Colorado. I'm going all over Texas. I'm doing 3 shows at the Chicago Theater, which I'm so excited about. I mentioned this last week, but we had to move some shows in Florida due to some personal things going on. So if you have tickets for my show in Jacksonville, Orlando, Miami, or St. Petersburg, those will be moved. Jacksonville's March 14th. Orlando is March 15th. St. Petersburg is May 29th. And Miami Beach is May 31st. If that doesn't work for you, you can get refunds and apologies. It's a very rare thing that happens in my life where I have to do that. I have upcoming shows in Aspen, Colorado, which if you want to meet Joe Birbiglia, go to Aspen, Colorado, or Beaver Creek, Colorado, or Fort Collins, Colorado, or Denver. Joe will be skiing, and I will be performing comedy. Then I'll be in Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Texas. I'm doing 3 shows at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, which, by the way, If you listen to this podcast, you're probably a comedy fan. The lineup of the Moon Tower Comedy Festival is just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. So Ronnie Chang, who's been on the show, is going to be there. Rachel Bloom, who's been on the show, is going to be there. Roy Wood Jr. is there. It is just like, it is a who's who. Rosebud Baker, Todd Barry, on and on and on. Just tons of folks who we've had on this podcast. And you can see in Austin, Texas, at a great, great comedy festival. Like, I can't say enough about the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. They've really carved out a cool, cool event. You can see me in Los Angeles. You can see me in Troy, New York, Rochester, Toronto. There's only a few tickets left. Atlanta, Charlotte, Richmond, Washington, D.C., only a few tickets left. Niagara Falls, Sag Harbor, New York, which is on Long Island. On, that's right, Long Island. In the Hamptons this summer in July. All of this is on Birbigs.com. Be the first to know by going to Birbigs.com and signing up for the mailing list, which is a tradition that dates back to when I was in college and I would perform at the Washington, D.C. Improv, and I would put little cards on the table asking people to sign up for my mailing list. Those same people are still on my mailing list, or they don't like me anymore and are no longer on the mailing list. That's fine, too. I encourage that also. But today on the podcast, we're so excited. We have Jim Gaffigan. He has released countless comedy specials, Mr. Universe, Obsessed, Cinco, Quality Time, all of which are comedy albums that received Grammy nominations. He's a best-selling author. He's just a hilarious comedy writer and just one of the truly unique voices in comedy who has really influenced a lot of sort of where comedy is and where it continues to go. His most recent comedy special is on Amazon Prime. It is called Dark Pale. It has been widely, widely revered and critically acclaimed. Enjoy my chat with the great Jim Gaffigan. You opened for the Pope.
Yes.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because the Pope, like, doesn't even come to America that often.
Right.
And so you opened for him. You've been doing comedy for, like, 30 years. You probably don't get nervous. You must have gotten nervous opening for the Pope.
Oh, I was terrified. I mean, because it was a no-win situation, right?
Right.
It was one of those things where nobody, you know, there's reverence and then there's... You know, it's kind of like the worst type of corporate,
right?
And it was Philadelphia's. And, you know, the whole Northeast is just, you know, there's just a hatred that runs through the Northeast.
That's hilarious.
Right?
Well, for sure. That's why there's so many comedians from the Northeast.
I think so. But I call the whole Acela line, I call it the corridor of hate. Because there's so much anger there.
You're dead on.
Philly...
Yeah,
you
Philly,
know,
D.C.,
York,
Baltimore.
Boston.
Yeah, I know that
you
line
know,
well.
It's all... Yeah,
the quiet car isn't quiet.
No. And there's an anger there. But by the way, I love it, though.
It's so funny because you said that the opening for the Pope was like a corporate because I do a lot of corporates and you do a lot of corporates because we're both... We don't curse a lot.
Yeah.
And so when the corporation wants to do an event, they're like, oh, these guys won't mess
right.
it up.
Right.
Won't
they
ruin.
Won't alienate the people.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
a lot of comedians, if you say, don't do this,
yes.
their instinct is to do that.
Of course. Then, of course, right. I will do that. They always say that. The last thing you should tell a comedian to do is not do something.
Yes.
Because they will say that thing. They'll do that thing.
Yes.
But, like, I always think of you when I'm at corporates because I'm like, Jim can work anywhere. Like, and I do well, but every once in a while, like I did one in Boston where it was like international business people from around the world. They didn't speak the same language. They probably spoke 10 different languages.
Yeah.
They didn't know each other. It was like a conference.
Yeah.
And I bombed.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
when I say it was silent in the room, it was as if the Buddha was there, he would have said, here is true peace.
Yeah.
And I got off stage and the guy running the event goes, and they usually try to dress it up.
Yeah.
He goes, does it usually go that badly? Does it ever happen? Has it ever happened for you?
Oh, yeah. After all the years you've done it, it still stings because you develop these tools to avoid those situations. But we're such whores for the money that we're like, all right, I'll go in there. Because I also
How bad could 1 hour be?
I did an event where it was in somewhere in Florida, and it was for like it was like a millionaires club, like where people were and they're like all millionaires and they meet and they share ideas and business ideas, and there was the announcement, no videotaping, no photos before the show, and it was a bloodbath
laughter.
It was, well, it was, there was some laughter, but it was true combat. It was.
Oh, they were coming at
you. It was like,
you.
There was just kind of heckling. There were videotaping. I would say, can you please not do that? And they'd be like, oh, come on. And then, so it was like a prom show.
Oh, come on.
Do you know what I mean?
Just to give context to the audience, people would have no idea that a prom show even exists.
Yeah.
When Jim and I were starting out, I mean, early 2000s for me, in the 90s for you, we would go to Caroline's and they would book us at 2 or 3 in the morning, sometimes 4 in the morning to perform for kids who needed to do activities after their senior prom.
So they wouldn't be
So they wouldn't be drinking. And then, of course, they would be drinking secretly.
Yes.
And then we would perform comedy and bomb. I mean, it would go terribly.
Yes.
And it would be people like you and me and you know, Ted Alexander and people who are great comics.
Yeah.
And are bombing in front of these high school kids.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, it's interesting because they are similar to corporates. Like, it's almost like I remember there was this thought where it's like, I want to do well on a corporate, but also if you do too well, like there are certain yes. shows that like
it's like and, if you do too well on a roast.
Yeah, no.
Start to go like, am I even a good comedian?
Well, it's also like that it's a different skill set, yes. right? And there are great comedians that can do roasting thing. But like I view it as similar to crowd work. It's like, yeah, that's a great skill. There are people that mm-hmm. are really good at it, but I don't think there's enough value in doing crowd work. I'm too much of a obsessed with the writing and the rewriting.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I can tell you are too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Completely it's obsessed. Just like, yeah.
It's like, yeah, there's, I mean, that's really impressive that you can do the crowd work. But like, you know, prom shows, corporates, roasts and stuff like that, which I've never really done a roast. Have
I've
you
never done,
done
one. I only did one, you know, years ago before yeah. Amazon became what it is.
Yeah.
There was a humor site called The Modern Humorist, and they asked me to roast Jeff Bezos.
Oh, wow.
And so I showed up, and Joe Birbiglia and I wrote jokes about Jeff Bezos.
Oh, wow.
And I sat there next to Jeff. I stood there next to Jeff Bezos, and I mocked him for 15 minutes. And then it was written up in Wall Street Journal and stuff like that. And that was like the only, it's the only roast I ever did.
If there is something about roasting.
And now he's the most powerful person in the world and could shrink me into like a
yeah.
like into a corn kernel if he wanted to.
There is, it is fascinating how, you know, because you get so deep into writing and you know, having teenagers and all this, it's you realize like roasting is put down humor, right?
Yeah.
And there's something, look, it's funny. It's, you know, all the diplomatic things I'm supposed to say, but it is put down humor. It is
all the diplomatic
it
things
is eighth grade. It is kind of your mom is fat, right? And
that's the basis
thing
of all put down humor.
And
your mom is blank.
It's yeah. also it's similar to crowd work, making fun of someone's shirt. And again, there are masters at it.
Yeah,
but it's you know, in the end, it's you know as great as Don Rickles was. It was a little bit of the curmudgeon-y thing, right? It was kind of like the lovable mean guy. You know what I mean? And there is, I mean, there's only one Don Rickles. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of be in that lane. Whereas, like, I think, you know, other types of comedy, there's more paths out of it.
There was a roast joke that Tom Papa talked about on this podcast, where yeah. John Mulaney roasted him by calling him Jim Gaffa Cant. And he said it was the meanest thing that anyone ever said to him.
Gaffa Cant?
Gaffa Cant. Tom, you're like Jim Gaffa Cant. And he said it hurt him so much. He's like, because we all revere Jim, and it's sort of, and I've always been in Jim's shadow in some way in my career, and like it hurts me. Like he said it 15 years ago.
Oh my God, that's so weird. Well, there's also something about the roasting thing. You know, if you put it out, you got to take it. And there's part of me right. that I don't want to take it.
I don't want to take it either.
Do you know what I mean?
Not interested.
So, and so, like, I don't have any. Again, it's like I enjoy them. And
what's the meanest burn anyone's had of you, even like on or off stage?
Oh, yeah, no, there's...
When do people diss you and it, like, actually hurts your feelings?
Yeah, that's, like, a really nice mic. What makes you feel horrible, Jim? I just want to put that out there so that all my...
So people can do it.
All my Birbigliaites...
So people can press that button on your head.
My Birbigliaites.
Oh, God.
You know, there is...
I called them Burbig Heads.
Burbig Heads.
No, we don't use that.
That's so funny. You know, it's weird. All right, here.
You don't have to say this, but you could say, like, what does Jeannie say to be mean? What does your wife say to be mean? Because she's super funny.
She, well, you know, it's like, look, that's, we've been married 20 years. So it's like, it's so complex beyond that. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like, that's like, that has nothing, she knows to like cut right to the
right.
bone.
She goes straight in there. Yeah, yeah.
It's why, you know, and I've been trying to work on that. It's like, when husbands have a fear of their wife, it doesn't mean they're weak. It just means that this person knows them so well. It's like,
I think about this all the time.
Right? It doesn't, it's not an indictment of the spouse.
No.
It's really like, you're dumb enough to be that vulnerable to this one person. You know,
oh my
it's
God.
Like, they're
That's
the-
That's such a deep statement.
They're the emotional bank. So like, yeah, you don't want to piss that person off. But
I think about this, well, because in my new hour, I'm talking so much about marriage
yeah.
because I spend 90% of my life with my wife and daughter. Like,
yeah.
it's so much. So my observations are so much about relationships. But what you're describing is what I'm kind of kicking around in that sand, which is like, yeah. if you're not, the similar thing, like, if you're not afraid of your wife, like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or husband. Yeah. If you're not a yeah. little bit afraid, because that person could just squash you emotionally
without
lifting a finger.
It's not about financial consequences or sleeping on the couch.
Yeah.
It's the knowledge that they have. And it's almost kind of like an emotional knowledge they have.
Yes.
Because particularly if you've been married to them for that long.
Yeah, for me, 15 years this week.
And if you're like in a relationship that long, you've failed so dramatically.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
And We've all failed so much.
They've had to forgive you.
They've been in the front row for all of your failures.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they went like that and go, all right, stand up, right?
That's right. The joke I have that I'm working on, which is like, I feel so lucky to have found this person who understands me most in the world, and yet about once a week, she'll stare at me while I'm doing some activity, and she'll go, well, what are you doing? And then I'll explain whatever it is, and then she'll start laughing, not with me, just at me with no one. And then I'll say, why are you laughing? She'll say, no reason. And that's the end of the conversation. And that's the person who understands me most.
Yes.
Which is sometimes it's lonely.
Yeah. And by the way, you almost like, you know, you fear your wife, but you also feel sorry for them. You're like, shit, you got to deal with me.
You deal with me.
You know what I mean?
It's huge.
Yeah.
Certainly as a comedian, because our whole thing is, and she's a comedian as well, or a comedy writer as well, and Jen's a poet, and so they share a lot in common with us. But you have to be married to someone who essentially for their profession scrutinizes things to a point of absurdity.
Yeah, and is embraces the contrarian view.
That's right.
And what people have to understand is that it's being married to a comedian is kind of like having a roommate that's a conspiracy theorist. Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to be the person that's like, did we land on the moon?
That's so
did
funny.
We?
And yeah, that's exactly
that's,
right.
That's entertaining for a while.
And for the audience.
But like, you know, I don't know.
I had this joke about it recently where I didn't say early stage, but it's just like, Jen goes like, sometimes I feel like you're not happy. I'm like, right. Like,
yeah.
That's what you were into when we met.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah.
I go, but I'm funny about it. I go, when I stop being funny about it, you can totally leave.
Yeah.
Because I think that's our strength as comics, right? Is like we can take what we believe is the reality of this scenario, which is like that everything, life is challenging. There's no way around it, you know? And we can, what our strength is we're able to make that somewhat funny.
Yeah.
And if we can't, I get it.
Yeah.
I get why someone would walk. In Dark Pale, you shot in Tampa, which is ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
Well, it's a funny town. First of all, I have family in Tampa, and I love them, and I'm going to visit them. I think I haven't announced this, but it's in, I think, in February. And, like, because I love them, but they used to live in Buffalo. And my joke about Tampa is it's the Buffalo of Florida.
See, but I feel like Tampa is the southern capital of the Midwest. It's
what?
It's everyone on the, so everyone from the East Coast goes to the East Coast.
You're
of
absolutely
Florida.
Right. Okay.
And Midwesterners and Canadians go to the West Coast of
Florida.
You're
absolutely right. But then you go, you have a joke up front about Tampa, America's next great city. I forget what the exact joke is.
No, that is, when I lived there, that was the big thing, that Tampa was America. I mean, this was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But Tampa was, I mean, they were building a mile of highway a day in Florida. It's
wow.
Just like, it's the population probably doubled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the past 40 years.
Do you always open with local jokes? Because like I was in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. And you ever feel like you go too far? Like, I go, we're in Philadelphia, the place where people go when it doesn't work out in New York.
And oh my gosh.
And it was like, what? The audience.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Philadelphia, incredible amount of pride. Incredible amount of pride.
Like, yes. The you and I and Mulaney, a few months ago, we raised $1.5 million for George Jones Scholarship
Isn't that
Program.
Amazing?
So how much of that do you get to keep?
$1.045 million No, none of it.
It's great, though.
Yeah, it
we
is
raised
great.
A whole bunch of bucks.
Yeah,
it is. And we'll plug it on here because it's a scholarship program for first-generation college students.
Yeah.
And we've done it twice now.
Yes.
Never again.
No, it is one of those things where...
It was draining.
It's so... Well, you know, everyone has these different things. And so you're trying to... You know, some of it is you're protecting the comedians from the bureaucracy that exists.
Yeah.
Where they're like, hey, can they all do this? Can they wear like a suit? And you're like, no. Yes. They are showing up. We're nice
doing
folks.
The best we can.
Right? I'm wearing a blazer. I'm like an adult. I'm like
you
an adult.
You look nice.
I'm like
you're
an adult.
You're ready for the corporate that is working it out.
I'm an adult. You know, like every now and then you'll see someone in a blazer and you're like, should I wear a blazer? Like, do you wear a blazer every now and then?
No, I do it for the, you know, talk shows and things, but I generally don't. I should. It's a slimming. It has a slimming effect.
Right? But it's just like...
I need to enter the phase of my career where I'm really looking to win people over with my looks. When does that start?
I don't think that's in... that's not an opportunity for me, that's for sure. But like, I do feel like there is some... Like, I'm not going to wear a tie, but like...
Yes.
You know, like, did you ever debate, like, should I wear jeans? Like,
right.
Am I too old to wear jeans?
I think one of the wisest things I've ever heard is, as a comedian, don't wear shorts.
Oh, yeah. Well, shorts is...
Deadly.
But Canadians, I feel like Canadians can wear shorts. Why is that?
So the special is called Dark Pale.
Yes.
It's darker material.
Yes.
Is that what you called it that?
Yeah. I mean, some of
it
was...
You talk about death like a lot.
Yeah. And some of it is, you know, it's all self-assignment, right? So it's like with each of your shows, you sit there and you go, all right, I'm going to do this. And I feel as though there are, you know... For most comedians, and that's why I think podcasts are so entertaining for people, is that there is, forget about the uncensored thing, but I think there's darker sides to comedians. Like what comedians
oh my God.
Laugh about is, you know, different from what we, and so like some of it, it's embracing some of that nihilism or that cynicism that is inherently in me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, of course. I mean, I say stuff at the Cellar that I would never put in a special. Like I followed Keith Robinson the other night, who's had two strokes and talks about it explicitly on stage, and he's brilliant. I mean, no one funnier than Keith Robinson. And I go on stage after. Whenever I go after him, I go, did Keith do all my stroke material?
Yeah.
I go, you know, we've all had a couple, but some of us just handle it better.
Right.
And, of course, the audience loves it.
Yeah.
Because audiences like dark humor.
They do. They do.
But like, you have a joke where you go, when an anti-vax preacher dies, everyone's like, good.
Yeah.
And the audience goes crazy.
Yeah. And that was in Florida, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
And so there is, I mean, it is interesting, like doing some material and, you know, hearing the laughs and hearing different types of laughs. Because I remember when I was doing Dark Pale, I have stuff where I talk about global warming and, and some of it is like, by the way, like, I believe that there's global warming, mm-hmm. but like, I don't understand it. You know, it's a little bit like the stock market.
Right.
I'm like, I know that people make money in the stock market, but I'm pretending to understand it.
No,
I know that, I know Apple's a good thing to buy, but the point I'm getting to with the global warming material is the different laughs from different parts of the audience.
Yeah.
So and it can shift. Like there is part of me like when I do the global warming material where people I can feel some people in the audience going, well, I don't believe in global warming, but I'll go along with your premise because I like you.
Yeah.
And there's also some people that are like, I can't believe we're not dealing with the global warming thing. You know, like there is this, and it's, but by the way, to answer your question about what hurts me, what has ever burned me, is the thing about like when I went off on Trump and the Republican thing, Trump and Trump people and trolls, but like there was like a couple of people that are like, Jim Gaffigan lost his entire audience because they're all dumb right wingers, and I'm like, no, they're not. You know, like the whole thing is like I felt like that kind of hurt my feelings, like. Because I do like, and I'm sure you're the same way, I like the, and I'm not saying I have the most diverse audience, but like, I do like the fact that there is the lesbian couple sitting next to the Mormon family at my show. So like,
I love that. I love that. I love that I have 12-year-olds and 100-year-olds in my audience. I love it.
I was going to say something very irreverent. But you love that for a different reason, Mike.
That's my God. Jesus Christ.
Mainly for because you like to have sex with 100-year-olds.
Oh, my God.
But
this is the side of Jim Gaffigan.
No, but like, so like that, but that's, I would say that's what was kind of
hurtful.
It's a generalization that, and maybe it hurt because there was a point where I was like, oh my God, what if everyone that came to my shows is a Trump supporter? And they weren't. But like there, and at the time it didn't matter, but it was kind of like, what if, because what you reap, you sow, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what you sow, you reap. And so like the whole thing of, and you've seen this with other comedians, like if you do really filthy stuff, or you do stuff just about partying, that's who's coming.
That's your audience. That's Bert Kreischer's audience. The party.
That's the people that are coming.
Yeah.
Now, if you're fine with that, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, and that's why I think with every hour, I do try and challenge them, like, tie glasses. Like, you always have some jokes to, like, weed people out.
Oh, my God, you do.
You know what I mean? Kind of like, well, obviously, you know, and some of it might be as basic as like not being freaked out by gay people. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There should be something of like, so if people are like truly homophobic, they're going to be like, oh, wait a minute. You know what I mean?
Right. This guy's not for me.
Yes.
And then you just self-weeded them out, basically.
Yes.
It's funny because you and I have this in common, which is I've been on the road for 20 years, seeing the whole, you know, the whole country. You've been on the road for almost 30 years, probably, right? And it's like, people do have a wild misconception on the coasts of the middle of the country.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really off. Like, people say to me constantly, like, a middle of the country, those shows must be terrible. I'm like, no, they're really good.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it's, but like, being from the Midwest, I always think it's like odd when people on the coast have this flyover mentality. It's like, but you do know Chicago is...
Yeah, dead center in the middle of the country.
It's the third largest city, or maybe yeah. It's... But like, it is, it just seems kind of, it's weird when people are like, so against bigotry, and then they attack it by introducing another form of bigotry.
It's very strange.
What a great guy I am.
I like Again. This guy. I like this guy. Right. Not only does he have great observational
He's
humor.
He's also wearing a blazer. He's a grown-up Jim Gaffigan. He looks like he showered.
Oh, my God, and I snorted. Oh, that's good that I snorted.
That is good.
You have one of the great opening lines, which is, hi, I'm Jim Gaffigan. I've never heard of me either.
Right?
And you probably can't do it anymore. You're really a household name.
Oh, no. I did that at, like, I don't know, my second or third special. And then I did it at the Grammy Awards, and it killed.
Are you kidding me?
I did it, like, 15 years later. I was, like, nervous, and I was like, I've never heard it. And it was like, Because that's, talk about an audience, like, I wouldn't, let me ask you this, like, hosting the Grammys, I would never want to do that.
No, I don't, people don't understand, I don't want to host anything.
Right.
But it's interesting because, you know, Gary here, who works on the show, he's been opening up a bunch of my Working It Out new material shows, and one of the things we always talk about is, like, you got to have an opening joke, and the reason you need an opening joke is the audience doesn't know whether or not they're on your side yet. And that is like the perfect joke. I've never heard of me either. The reason it's perfect, in my opinion, is it's I've never heard of me either. Six words.
Yeah.
And you're on the, you've analyzed how they see you.
Yeah.
And then you've read their minds.
Yeah.
And then you've come up with six words that encapsulate that immediately. And they represent that you have a sense of humor and that you understand them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like so dense.
Yeah.
How many years did it take for you to come up with that? Were you like, I got to come up with an opening joke?
Well, I feel like with each of them, I was kind of trying to think of, you know, like there's different, you know, but when I do a special, then I'm like, all right, I got to find another way into this.
Yeah.
Where it kind of diffuses, because it's awkward, right? You're essentially... you know, greeted with applause. And so how do you diffuse that and segue into the show?
Yeah.
Right? Because I do think that I want to get to work and I also want them to know that I'm going to be doing jokes.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it is like there's different jokes in each of the specials that are kind of... You know, like, I think one of them, I was like, oh, he's fatter than I thought he would be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's, some of it is disarming the awkward moment, but also speaking for them, acknowledging self-awareness.
Yeah. You've been in comedy 30 years. It's like, you've changed as a comic.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest change you think in your comedy?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I would say it is so, you know, like I went through periods where I was writing a lot with my wife.
Yeah.
And I would say that there's times when I would, and I'm sure this is probably the case with you, where I would, and now I sometimes go on stage and kind of riff on a topic.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, just the complexity of our family life has,
Five kids.
When I first started dating my wife, I would do a spot. Either she would come with me or after a spot, I would grab a bottle of wine and we would sit at home drinking wine, talking comedy.
Yeah.
And you just, like, the luxury of that is just gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we're, like, trying to squeeze in conversations. You know?
Yes. What your son does stand up? Started doing stand up?
He's toured with me. He's 17.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so amazing because he, I don't know, have you done the Minnesota State? There's different state fairs, and it's, you perform for like 13,000.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Outside. So he opened, he's opened for, we've done a couple weeks, like a bus tour here.
So
and
he
there.
Performed in front of 13,000 people.
And he was like completely unfazed.
Unbelievable.
And, but it's also, I'm all about preparation. I assume you are too,
yeah,
right?
I'm obsessed, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm like, dude, you got to write out your beats. Yeah. You know, you got to prepare. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I'll come in the room. And he's like, just looking at his phone. I'm like, there's like 3,000 people out there.
All right, this is called the slow round.
Okay.
This is a new one. What's your guilty pleasure food? Because you talk about it so much.
Yeah.
What's your one that's real and you actually eat it?
I mean, guilty pleasure in that it's like, it's just absolute garbage.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, you're still eating that? Like, are you still eating Hot Pockets? Like,
no,
for real?
No, I never ate Hot Pockets. That's the whole irony.
Wait, you never ate them
no,
for real?
No, I never. Well, I never said that I liked that. That's what's interesting. If you look at the Hot Pocket material, I never said I liked them.
This is hilarious to me. You're famous for being the Hot Pocket person.
I made fun of them.
I know, you mocked
for
them mercilessly.
Causing diarrhea and stuff like that. And people were like, oh, you
double
love Hot
snort,
Pockets.
Second snort.
You know, but yeah, no, I never really, but what's, there's a lot of guilty pleasures. Where
mine's Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, really? Oh, that's yeah,
Cinnamon
cereal's
Toast Crunch. That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous food.
It's a ridiculous food.
Yeah.
But I, my wife is from Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And
anything cheese.
So she's kind of a cheese snob. And I love this port wine cheddar, which is like a essentially processed cheese. And she's like, don't eat that. Just get real cheddar. You like cheddar. You like cheese. Why are you getting that? And I'm like, I just like the tang of it.
Ah, oh, that's how I feel about like the macaroni and cheese with the powder.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like the powder cheese where it's like,
yeah.
It's
a little
joke,
tart.
Yeah, I make the joke at stage. It's like, it's not even cheese. It's like a press conference for cheese. Like, cheese couldn't be here this afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm here on behalf of cheese. I'd like to thank butter. Milk was a big part of this. But I love that stuff. What's a song that makes you cry?
Oh, I only like sad songs. My kids get so angry. They get so angry. Enough with these sad songs, my God. But I only like ballads.
What songs can you think of?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Here, let me.
Look on your Spotify or whatever.
But I have a lot of musical taste. I'm very insecure about my musical taste. So.
Oh. Perfect.
I have The Call by Regina Spektor up here. I have Karma Police.
Oh, yeah. Karma Police is a perfect example. Right. It's such a crier. It's such an emotional song.
Yeah. But my kids get mad because they're bad songs and I listen to them. Well, they're not bad songs. They're just kind of, they're sad. And they're kind of ballads, like Lewis Capaldi stuff. I like that stuff.
Yeah. You know what gets me? Olivia Rodrigo's song, Driver's License.
Oh, really?
It gets me.
If you hear the noise right now, it's people unsubscribing from this podcast.
That's so funny.
Because they're like, and it's not an insult to Olivia Rodrigo. It's the fact that like this wasn't recorded in 2021.
That's so funny. No, I saw it. That wasn't even on my radar. It was a huge hit. And then I went to see Keegan-Michael Key host SNL. And I was like, I saw it live for the first time. And I was like, crying. I'm like, this is unbelievable. This song is beautiful. I don't even know if she wrote it. I think she
did.
It.
No, she writes all of it.
The you and Seinfeld, who you're touring with, I feel like touring together, it's a little bit of a monopoly. I feel like the government should break it up.
Really?
You're taking comedy audiences. You're touring as a double bill.
Oh,
you're taking comedy audiences, and there's nothing left for the rest of us.
Oh my gosh, that's well, obviously that's, you're being nice, but that's, it is one of those things where Jerry had brought it up before the pandemic. He's like, why don't we do a couple of shows together? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
On that tour, will you pick his brain about comedy?
Oh my gosh, that's all we'll talk about. Well, we meet up all the time and do a show, and then we'll talk for 2 hours about stand-up.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And because I think he is the guru.
Yeah, he's the Socrates of comedy.
He is.
And he
knows the most.
And he's an absolutist. Like, there's... So he is... he's one of those guys that... he also removes some emotions that would get in the way. Like, he doesn't gossip. He doesn't... He is all about, like, it's either funny or it's not. Yeah. It's just jokes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's not... I mean, he's human. He has opinions on things.
He also said a thing famously once. Yeah. I think about his stuff all the time. He said, if a joke works once, it can work forever.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting concept?
Yeah.
He also says, to put it in an acting perspective, that the audience is your scene partner, which I think is true.
Oh, that's brilliant.
He's got so much wisdom.
Yeah, and it's, some of it is, it's really fun talking about some of the philosophies on things, and he'll have a strong opinion on something. So, like, one of the things he says is, he's like, oh, you know, someone will be, ask him about something, he'll be like, and he's not being dismissive of the person, but he's like, all right, in 5 years, who's doing this in 5 years?
Yeah.
Who's and some of it is, and because I think that comedy is, you have to evolve.
Who's doing this in 5 years? That's powerful.
Right.
I wrote this one this morning, which is, you know, I have a daughter, and eventually we're going to have a sex talk, which is, you know, I'm dreading. But so I
with your wife or
no? An old fast. My joke was, so I pitched to my wife that she and I should have sex and do a Q&A, and because I have a lot of questions.
Yeah,
that's all I have. It's called Sex Talk with Q&A.
Right, that's funny.
That's fun, right?
But it is like, it is, you know, the weird, you know, the sex thing. It's also, it's once you get, you bring up sex and you enter the kid thing, then it's.
Oh, I know.
It's really, it's also, it's just, you don't want to get icky.
Oh,
right?
I know. I said a joke on stage the other night that I don't think I'll do again, but it's if it was funny in the moment. I go, I hate, I love my daughter. I hate her friends.
Yeah.
I go, when I they're insufferable. I go, when I'm with her friends, I'm like, I'm like, now I really don't understand pedophilia.
No, see, but like,
and I'm not going to do that again. It won't
see,
be in
but
the next
that's
hour.
That's one of those things where among comedians,
that's a very comedians joke.
We love the darkness of it because we also, you know, we know that like that is some of the humor is that it's antithetical to your values, da da da.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the general populace would be like, you're being dismissive of that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but it's weird because you and I have this in common, which is, Ira Glass called me out on this podcast. He's like, you're so calm on stage, and in life you're not calm. You're intense and you're anxious and you're this, you know. I know, I go, but it's honest. When I'm on stage, I'm actually more calm than I am off stage.
Yeah. No, there is something interesting also. I think there's also something, there's biases we all kind of carry around with us.
Yeah.
That... And I think because people look at us, you and me, and they don't think nudge.
What's nudge?
Nudge is kind of like somebody who's just kind of driven.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's, you know, it's like here, it's, I think it's like a Yiddish term and stuff like that. But it's, But it's because the perception is that we're not like that.
Yeah.
And our personalities are not like that, that we probably get away with more. It's kind of like the equivalent of someone being really tall and people assuming they'd be good at basketball.
Right.
It's just this, it's in some ways a harmless bias.
Right.
But
you're like a person who your act, I mean, you've made it 10 comedy specials. You're one of the few people on the planet who's made 10 comedy specials. And you talk about being lazy.
Right.
It's like, you're not lazy. Come on.
But some of it is, there are moments of it, right? There are moments
right.
where we engage in, like...
Right. You're not being dishonest. You have the feeling sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. And there's still, you know, compared to my wife, I am very lazy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Do you know what I mean? And, you know, when I go to a parent-teacher conference, I do need a vacation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like... It's just brutal. It's just like walking in schools. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys have to come here every day.
This is I think you'll relate to, is it's so absurd. I was on the subway heading to the cellar to work on material, and I'm carrying like these note cards, and they all have jokes on them.
Yeah.
And I'm memorizing them, and this woman next to me goes, hey, are you a comedian? And I go, yeah, yeah. I go, I'm working on my notes, and we both look down, and the note card says, remembering porn. And then neither of us speak for the rest of the subway ride, and then I exit the train, and we never speak again. It was, the silence
great.
Was so deafening, I'm still deaf.
Well, by the way, that whole thing is like, and that's what, I don't know what your new show is about, but that is... That's a slice of it that you get into that.
What's the
slice of
it?
Porn.
Did I weigh in? So then here's the joke.
That you sit there and that's like a juicy part where you sit there and you go, we're going to save that. Even if the porn joke doesn't
interesting.
Work.
Interesting. Yes. Like you use as a tease early in the set and
because
then you come to the joke later.
Because there is something about like, it's a little bit of that. What I should have said.
Yes, it's a little what I should have said was nothing. Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Do you have any bits that you're throwing on stage right now that are like new?
I mean, I've been kind of, you know, I was working on this movie, so I haven't been obsessing. But like there is a joke that yesterday I was telling someone and they were like, that's funny, which was about how... and again, it might not be anything, but like how Pat Sajak is retiring.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you really call it retiring from hosting Wheel of Fortune? Like, it's like, even if after he takes like 2 weeks off,
yeah,
is he like, you know, I tell you, I got to get my mind back in it. You know, I got to do, you know, I definitely forget which letters are vowels.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I have to go through that.
That's funny.
I just think it's so interesting because obviously Pat Sajak, it's great that, you know, we associate him with Wheel of Fortune.
But yeah.
Is there like no one's going to be able to.
I got to remind myself, what's
spin.
A person? What's a place? What's
yes.
a thing?
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
it's like, what is the. Was he the luckiest man in entertainment in history, or is there, maybe I'm not looking at it, maybe there is something really unique that he does besides it's
yeah.
your turn.
Oh my God. I wrote this joke recently about how my daughter's 8. You met her on the way in. She's like the greatest. And it's the cutest age. But in my mind, I can't not leap to when she's 16 and she's going to be like, my dad is garbage. And like, because when I was a kid, you know, my dad didn't have to deal with that because when I was younger, grown-ups disregarded children.
Yeah.
Like we used to say that and my dad would be like, is someone talking? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now she'll be like, my dad's garbage. And I'm going to have to be like, she's so brave. I totally agree with her.
Yeah.
That's such a great point. She's saying it so well. Someone needed to say it.
No, but I think it's also... you don't know.
What do you mean?
That's the thing. It's not predestined.
Oh, interesting. So did you deal with that with any of your kids?
Well, my my oldest, not really embarrassed of me, my son, and then my next daughter, you know, can you act like you don't know me?
Oh, God.
So it's...
Can you act like you don't know me? It's so great.
Right? But like, and in front of kids that I've met before.
Yeah.
And so, but...
This is the most petty version of Jim Gaffigan I've ever seen. In front of kids I've met... So the final thing we do is working out for a cause.
Yes.
And I think we should give to Georgetown Scholarship Program.
Yes.
And then we should link to them in the show notes since we raised a ton of money for them, and it's such a good organization.
Yeah. You know, it's just making some steps.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I don't know. What are the answers, Tom? What are the answers?
We have all Mike, we have the answers. I'm Mike.
Mike, okay.
I go by Mike currently.
For Biggs.
Jim, congrats on the special.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming by the studio.
So fun.
And this is, I'm excited for people to see Dark Pale. So good.
Thanks so much. So appreciate good. It. Thank you.
And we'll wrap
this. That was the perfect ending.
Yeah, it's a great ending.
This is the ending where people are like, wait, well, they ended
great.
It like that?
It's great.
Working it out, because it's not done. We're working it out, because there's no...
That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. You can follow Jim on Instagram at Jim Gaffigan. Go see Jim on tour. Watch his special on Prime Video. He's a phenomenal comic. Is it safe to say legendary comic? He's a legendary comic. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Joseph Birbiglia and Peter Salamone, associate producer Mabel Lewis, consulting producer Seth Barish, assistant producer Gary Simons, sound mix by Ben Cruz, supervising engineer Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Mercer Hurwitz and Josh Upfall, as well as David Raphael and Nina Quick, my consiglieres, Mike Berkowitz. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. Special thanks to Jay Hope Stein, my wife, the poet, and of course our daughter Una, who built the original radio fort made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. You know what's the most helpful? If you have 3 minutes, go on Apple Podcasts, rate and review. Actually, even you don't even have to review. Just say what your favorite episode is. And that way, if people just stumble upon the podcast, there's 100+ episodes. Then they know what to go to. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Maybe you're friends with the Pope. Maybe you're enemies with the Pope. Either would be phenomenal. We gotta get this out to the Pope. We gotta get the Pope to be working out jokes. See you next time, everybody. We'll be working it out.